TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
NFL is back.
All the time. A division of Bell Media. From the Max Bell Center of the University of Manitoba for the Goals for Dreams charity hockey game. It's the O'Neagle Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the O'Neagle Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined not in studio, but at the Max Bell Center on the campus of the University of Manitoba. We're here for the Goals for Dreams charity hockey event that'll get underway here on TSN 1290 in a number of hours. Joining me to the left, my colleague Richard Pollock, to the right, Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, at O'Neagle Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And our website with the latest NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. Richie, Ezzy, good afternoon, gentlemen. We had last week off, a little bit of a refresh and a recharge. Good to see you both back, looking well in here at the Max Bell Center.
It would have been a it would have been a little bit of rest for us had we not taken the weekend and attempted to sleep in the same hotel room as Ezra Ginsberg.
Yeah, that's always a problem.
Right. I apologize for that, guys, but we had a good time down in Minneapolis, saw Bruce Springsteen, saw a Vikings game, but it's obviously awesome to be back broadcasting live from Max Bell Arena. We actually have some hockey to talk about today. There's going to be a game, obviously. We're watching, there's some young kids playing right now in the Max Bell Arena. We've got Mike Ridley's jersey number up in the rafters there. It's awesome, but yeah, it's good to be back and obviously watching some hockey on the ice.
Exactly right. The game will get underway a little bit later on, and we're excited to be a part of that. You'll be hearing from various NHLers throughout the broadcast this afternoon. We're excited to talk to them. You know, haven't seen, sort of been different. You know, we're approaching December rapidly, and this is the closest we've seen to NHL hockey in the city, something that we all, you know, want to end sooner rather than later, because we are really tired of talking lockout. And we'll get to the lockout coming up next segment. But let's start in Dynamo. Dynamo Minsk of the KHL has released Winnipeg Jets forward Evander Kane from his contract. If you, depends on who you ask. If you ask Evander's agent, Craig Oster, U of M graduate, as it happens here on the campus of University of Manitoba, if you ask Craig Oster, he'd say that both sides mutually agreed to end the agreement with one another. They both acknowledged that it hadn't worked out as they had intended. I don't buy that, really, for as far as I can throw Evander Kane. I think the word that you can use to describe his performance in Russia has been a bust.
Yeah, Drew, it's been a bust, but and I got to be honest. I mean, it's been a bust. I don't know what people's expectations were from the outset. Probably more goals.
Definitely more than one goal, zero assists, a minus eight plus minus in 12 games in the KHL.
Okay. But what does it mean? And I'll tell you what it means. It means absolutely nothing. If it raises some questions about character, performance issues, I don't think it's any questions that maybe weren't there beforehand.
I would agree. Those questions are probably...
Yeah, those questions were there, and the Jets were cognizant of those questions slash issues when they signed him to the deal they signed to on the eve of the lockout occurring. So I really don't think anything here is something to... I don't think anything that occurred over in Russia is anything to read into. Sure, he would have had liked to have a better performance. Was he taking it seriously? I don't know, but if you're a Jets fan, you're wondering if he takes the Jets seriously, and so far he has obviously proven that he can. He's scored at an NHL level, above average for sure. So, I mean, I just think a lot of the performances overseas mean absolutely nothing. I think the players are just trying to kill time, a lot of them, and whether they deem selfish or not, I mean, there's a benefit for both the owner, for both the leagues and the players. The players get some money, they get to keep their legs fresh. The other leagues get a little bit of publicity they never would get and all that stuff. So it goes both ways, but I don't fret if I'm a Jets fan based upon the news that came out yesterday.
Well, and there was, you know, Drew, just quickly, I mean, there were rumblings that, you know, the team was, it's a fact that the team wasn't happy with his fitness level, which is surprising because Evander Kane, as we know, is the fastest guy on the Jets and one of the fastest guys in the NHL when he's playing in the NHL. And there were some rumblings that he wasn't happy there. The reality is both sides weren't happy. And as far as what this means, this news means, Richie is right. I mean, If the season was going on, Evander Kane would be the best player on the Winnipeg Jets. And the fact that he wasn't performing well in the KHL really does not mean that much. Sure, you would like for him to have put up big numbers and, you know, score a hat trick and get lots of points and possibly work on his game and bring back some of the skills that he learned in Russia, bigger ice. You know, he could have used his speed more. The reality is it didn't work out. So, and, you know, they're cutting their ties early. Now you just hope that he's going to stay in good shape, because now we don't know if he's going to join another team.
Well, we hear that he's going back again from Craig Oster, that he's going back to Vancouver, his hometown. And it's like you said, when this lockout ends, assuming it ends sometime, you know, this year, there's not going to be a lot of time for these players to get back into shape if they're out of shape.
Well, and Richie, what a lot of guys were doing in the last lockout, and you know, there's guys are doing a bunch of different things. You have guys that are coaching. A guy like Evander Kane, maybe go back and play with your junior team, the Vancouver Giants.
Or skate with them, obviously not play with them.
Yeah. But, you know, stuff like that, because you want to stay in game situation scenarios as much as you can. Obviously, you can't duplicate that. But, you know, maybe he'll decide to come back and skate with the guys at the MTS Iceplex. We're not sure. But, again, it's unfortunate that it didn't work out in the KHL, but that was only a temporary stop anyways.
Is it safe to say that all we need to know about a performance in the KHL is that, and as it relates to predicting NHL performance, is that Tim Stapleton is leading the Dynamo Minsk team in points?
That's a good way to put it, Drew.
Well, and again, a guy like Tim Stapleton, though, he's played in Finland before. He's a guy that, you know, the open ice is good for him. So, but I mean, you can't.
He's playing for his hockey career, though.
Absolutely, Drew. And nothing translates over. I mean, and this goes back to Andre Pavlik leaving his Czech League team. He wasn't playing well, even though he started to play better. That means nothing. I mean, people forget you don't just join a team in the Czech League or the Russian Continental League and everything transfers over. You're joining a team that's already established. You have to learn your own team and stuff like that. So, you know, 10 games, it's a small sample size. You can't really read too much into it and say that, oh, you know, Andre Pavlik isn't going to have a good year this year because he was putting up bad numbers in the Czech League.
Let me ask you guys this, and it was dealt with briefly in Gary Lawless's column in today's Winnipeg Free Press. Kane is certainly a guy, he's a lightning rod for criticism, and was last year in Winnipeg, and there was questions about his attitude and his commitment to the Jets, and things that really were speculative at best, and nobody really knows the situation, or there's a couple people who do, and it's not us.
Yeah.
You know, if this proves to be a humbling moment for him, and again, it's a big if, and maybe he doesn't even need to be humbled by what happened in the KHL, is that an altogether bad thing? If it's a humbling moment, or would you rather see a guy keep a little bit of a cocky edge to him and go out and sort of and light it up overseas?
I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, maybe for him it could try and ease that apparent ego that he has. But in my opinion, I don't think that this will change his attitude. I don't think experience in the KHL, which isn't at the NHL level, without teammates he's probably ever going to play with, many with or against, will have any effect on him on an ongoing basis. I won't read into it too much at all. If it's a humbling moment, first of all, you have to have the ability to, willingness to accept being humbled. And I'm not so sure that's the case or not. I mean, and again, this is my outsider point of view from what I've seen.
And Richie, basically, at the end of the day, doesn't it come down to, I mean, Evander Kane was talking to Tim Stapleton, and he said, okay, why don't you try coming over and playing for Dynamo Minsk? They played together on the Jets last year, and it didn't work out. It was an experiment. You move on.
I agree, and it's different, though, and Stapleton knows he's going to be there all year.
Exactly.
He can put his heart and soul into it, and hopefully he can get himself another NHL contract, which clearly he probably wouldn't have got, or at least that much money.
Yep.
So for him, it's different. I'm there the whole year. I want to make the best of this. Kane's like, I might be here for a week. They might settle right away. I might be here for 2 months. Well, whatever. When you know there's an end date, it's hard to put your whole, you know, it's like a relationship. You know you're going to be with somebody and then they're going to leave. You know at the end, you can't put your whole heart into it because it's generally going to end badly.
Because of Evander Kane's name and the fact that he was the first Canadian player to go over and play in Russia, it's been blown out of proportion a little bit. And the fact that he wasn't playing well, obviously he's not happy about. But at the end of the day, he's not second-guessing his ability as an NHL hockey player at all.
Well, you wouldn't. You would hope that he wouldn't be. You would hope that this experience...
I don't think there's any second-guessing with him.
I don't think there is either. I mean, and that was my point. You know, they talk about, he's got to be more humble. Frankly, I don't care what his attitude really is. If he's continuing to put 30 goals into the net in the NHL.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, that's right.
I mean, there's a certain degree of maturity that they want to see in Evander Kane now that he's got the multi-year contract. But you're right, Drew. I mean, the guy...
Well, for all the criticism that he got last year, and there was a lot of criticism, and again, we don't know how much of it was accurate and how much it was fair to him or not. You know, the guy puts up 30 goals. He's still your best player.
Yep.
Frankly, you know, I don't have to go out for coffee with the guy. I don't care if he's got a bad if he's got a big ego or not.
The team does, though.
The team might. I mean, they have to deal with him in the dressing room, but. Yeah. You know, scoring goals and winning games heals all wounds. The guy can be the biggest jerk or the biggest, any player can be a big jerk or have a big ego. But if he's performing on the ice,
makes it easier to stomach. I understand that. And in terms of Pavlik, I mean, we said on the show that, you know, the contract he got, I thought was a little bit of an overpay. It was an overpay, I thought. And his performance there doesn't make me say, oh, it's for sure. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, you evaluate him on the NHL performance that he's put forward so far, and when the NHL comes back, whether that's next week, next year, or, well, it won't be any longer than that, you'd hope, then we'll get to see what he's all about with the structure of a team and a system and another year in Noel's system another year with teammates, although he spent a lot of time with many of these teammates. We'll see what he's really going to do. And the truth is, you know, you talk about these two players, though. Six and a four-year deal, right? 6 years for Kane and 4 years for Pavlik?
Yeah, five for Pavlik.
Five for Pavlik. Yeah. I mean, you know... It's a lot of money tied up in those guys, too. You're up another
budget. Certainly a sizable commitment for both of them.
The importance of these two can't be understated, but I don't think it's at all indicative. They're playing the KHL or overseas is not at all indicative of what's to be expected.
I suspect that you're probably correct, and I mean, for those who are, you know, lamenting, well, why did Pavlik leave, if you're asking that question? It was by mutual agreement. This was the end date for both of them, for both team and player agreed.
He signed a short-term contract.
Yeah, when the contract was initially signed. He's on his way back to Winnipeg. He's got some housekeeping to take care of with the Winnipeg Jets, namely the drunk driving incident that hasn't been addressed in person yet. So certainly that's something that he's got to come back and deal with.
But that can't be done right now, though.
It can't be done right now. Yeah. Exactly right. But he's going to be in. I mean, he'll be in Winnipeg by the sounds of it.
Yeah, but I don't think they can have.
No, they can't sit down with him. All right. Right. The lockout ongoing. That'll be done. But he'll be. I mean, let's be honest. I have trouble believing there's absolutely zero contact between players and ownership.
No, I
think there's back channels you can go through and
for
everything
sure,
else.
For sure.
You know, emissaries.
You'll see probably him end up on a campaign for some form of.
You're saying later on in Winnipeg to rehabilitate his image,
and that would be a smart thing for him to do, based on the fact that drinking and driving obviously is terrible, and what happened with him he regrets, and it would be a good way to put that, you know, end that, get some closure, so to speak, on that incident.
I agree wholeheartedly with both of those comments, but it is, like you said, important to note that. Anybody who's trying to extrapolate a performance overseas in the KHL or in the Czech Republic to future performance in the NHL, there's just no direct correlation that can be reasonably made. And to do so would be a little bit, you know, you're putting the cart before the horse. Sure, it might affect both of them? Yeah, but we also don't know anything else that could possibly affect them going forward.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to look at and review right now in terms of hockey, so you read into things that wouldn't be read into as much because you have less to look into.
And, Richie, the reality is, okay, a young guy, even if you look back at the 2004-05, Rick Nash, Joe Thornton, back in Switzerland now, they were there in 2004-2005, and then there's some other younger guys that went there. Sure, if they perform well and they're coming in, yeah, that might help. Okay, they got some confidence playing in Europe and stuff like that, but you look at the countless hockey players who have tried to translate their game from Russia or Finland. I mean, some guys are successful with it. I mean, if you look at a guy like Brian Rafalski, joined the Devils after playing in Finland, but a guy that I know you're going to love this name drop, Richie, a guy like Yuri Karlati, or the countless other guys that come over from Finland or Russia or whatever. I mean, there's you can make as much of a translation as you want to, but the NHL is the NHL. And these other leagues are their other leagues. And I know that, you know, that's kind of a simplistic way of looking at it. But, I mean, if you perform in the NHL and then you go over in Europe and don't perform there, that doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to get your game back.
The buzzer went off. That means it's time for us to go to commercial break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at the Max Bell Arena on the campus of the University of Manitoba for the Goals for Dreams charity hockey event. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio, actually, the Max Bell Arena.
Drew, that was...
Sorry, is this our new studio, Drew?
Force of Habit, at the Max Bell Arena by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Gensburg. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, located at 1580 Taylor Avenue. Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza is the best in local pizza establishments, I would have to say. Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza... Pizza baked, well done.
If Dan Simon is listening, owner of Carbone Coal Fire Pizza, do you think he would drive all the way out to U of M to deliver us a Carbone pizza?
Ooh.
This is a little bit out of the area.
You can only hope so, Ezzy.
Yeah. You can only hope.
He's got a bunch of pictures with all the a lot of hockey players in the.
Yeah, it was a big wall
right
of.
Right by the opening the door. So you wonder maybe he'll come and get some more pics.
Yeah, that's
maybe,
true.
And maybe bring us a pizza while we're at
You know what I want, Izzy? I want a picture of you and him up on the wall.
Dan Simon?
Yeah, it'll be reversed. It'll be facing the wall.
Good call. Good call.
Nicely done.
Good call.
Article coming out of Philadelphia from early this morning, our good friend Frank Saravelli of the Philadelphia Daily News writes that Ed Snyder, who is the governor of the Philadelphia Flyers, not the owner, let me make it clear, he's the governor, he's the chairperson. Yeah. The team is owned by Comcast. Comcast is also the majority owner of NBC, so you just know the background context to it. Probably the one of the most affected groups in this lockout is the NBC Sports Network, which relies heavily on the NHL to make up their content on their new cable sports channel. They're trying to compete with ESPN, and their number one property is undoubtedly the NHL.
Yeah, and they just bought into soccer, too.
They just bought into some Major League Soccer as well, you're right. But, I mean...
NHL's number one, and they get content every single night of the week. Basically, they were trying to put on games, and even last year, people who aren't don't know, although TSN 2 would generally pick up some games, is Comcast, what they would do is, you know, they own NBC, and NBC Sports Network would broadcast games, but they would do double headers where they would simulcast a local, like, San Jose production,
right,
because the local San Jose TV rights were owned by Comcast.
Comcast, exactly right. So they big company, huge influence in the hockey world. Anyways, Frank Saravelli writes today.
You contacted, by the way.
Who I contacted. He's unable to join us on the air today. He's actually sick under the weather. So he said, my radio voice probably wouldn't be good for your listeners to hear right now. Mm-hmm. But we'll get Frank on in the next week or so, undoubtedly. Anyways, Frank Saravelli writes today in the Philadelphia Daily News that Ed Snyder, who had been seen behind the scenes as sort of a hawk, as you will.
A hardline owner,
supposedly, is now softening. He's softening his stance, and he might not be as close to being in Gary Bettman's corner as he once was, simply because, I mean, I can extrapolate this, they need the content for TV that badly.
You're absolutely right, Drew, and I know you want to go on here.
Well, you can jump in there if you want, Izzy.
I mean, the reality is that of all of the owners, there is a division. Richie wrote a really good article for Overtime, and if Remus is able to,
we'll get
it out there. Richie wrote this about, you know, the difference between the owners, and there are the owners that make a lot of money. You can put the Canadian teams in there.
Absolutely.
The Jets are somewhere in the middle. You know, they didn't qualify for revenue sharing, but this isn't propaganda.
Let me quickly get in here before you continue. People need to understand something. And the hockey-related revenue thing is a fight. But if the Jets maybe make some money but not a lot of money, doesn't mean they're not making money on other properties that have benefited from the Jets being downtown.
And that applies to many teams.
Exactly. So I just want to qualify that.
That's why the whole thing in Phoenix with the property development around it.
Exactly.
Right. So, I mean, the thing with these hardline owners, the Jeremy Jacobs, the Ed Snyder, I mean, that's realistic. I mean, the guys, the teams, the Phillies, the Bostons, the Rangers, the Habs, those are the guys that are the most powerful. The teams that make the most money, I think we would all agree, are the most powerful. Because if you have a guy, especially a guy that's just new to the NHL or something like that, he hasn't been around that long. Ed Snyder's been around forever. Same thing with Jeremy Jacobs.
But Ed Snyder is the longest serving governor in the NHL.
There you go.
He's on the NHL's executive committee. That's a group of about 8 or 9 owners, I believe.
And pulls a lot of rank there.
Yeah, he pulls a lot of rank, as does Jeremy Jacobs.
And that executive committee supposedly is what gives Gary Bettman their direction and helps steer policy in the NHL.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Long story short, if the executive committee tells Gary Bettman, get a deal done, there'll be a deal done.
Absolutely, and it should be noted that in 2004, Harley Hotchkiss of the Calgary Flames was very instrumental.
He was.
And this time around, there was an article in the Globe and Mail 2 weeks ago. Murray Edwards, who has made a lot of money in the oil industry in Alberta,
Murray Edwards out of Calgary is now one of the hardliners. Supposedly.
And so it's not like there's just one or two or three or four. I mean, there's significant other guys. They all have influence.
What happens, Izzy, is the longer you go, people generally don't stay in the same positions, I'd say, in this situation. The longer you go, the middle will start moving over to one side or the other. The middle, so that means that the middle, say there's a middle 10 owners, which you can maybe guess there might be.
Yep.
They either start going hardline, or, you know, we don't feel like we're getting a fair shot here, or they go, let's get a deal done.
That's right.
They don't usually say, okay, you guys decide. They become more partial, I think.
And that's why it's surprising that one of the supposed hardliners, which everybody sort of had the Philadelphia Flyers penciled in as, are beginning to soften.
Right. But now he has a lot of pull there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that, say, another hardliner or another guy who is maybe in the middle, who still has a lot of pull, has decided he wants.
People are obviously shifting as things develop and everybody's business interests change to some degree.
For example, Calgary. I mean, Calgary is a moneymaker.
Yeah.
The owner's got a lot of money.
It's odd that they're such a hardliner,
supposedly. That's what I'm saying. Well, you know, in the last negotiation, it seemed like Hartley Hotchkiss was a bit of a moderator.
Right. Right.
A moderate, excuse me. So these things change. They're fluid. So my Snyder certainly will have an effect, and I think the TV issue is the biggest reason, as you've already mentioned.
Right.
Ownership, owners will start, I think,
and that's
becoming more positional as time goes on.
And the TV issue is one that really might be the catalyst that ends this entire thing.
Yep. Because
the New York Rangers are also viewed as an anti-lockout team.
Why would they want a lockout?
Because they have a TV network, multiple, yep. and that rely on the New York Rangers.
Mm-hmm. MSG.
Madison Square Garden, yep. TV network. Yep. They rely on the Rangers, and they rely on the Islanders, I believe.
Devils, too.
The Devils are also broadcast on MSG.
I think MSG now is a subsidiary of MSG does the Sabres games.
That could very well be. So these are four teams that any content.
Well, and on that, an interesting point. You know, on our drive, we took the trip down to Minneapolis last week, St. Paul, which we mentioned earlier. Our drive down, we heard on the satellite radio an interview with Jonathan Gatehouse.
Jonathan Gatehouse, who's recently wrote a book about Gary Bettman's tenure as NHL commissioner.
And what he basically says is before, in the book, I haven't yet read the book, but I listened to the Gatehouse interview, before the Toronto Maple Leafs sell a ticket, they've already made.
Well, they've made all their money. It's like an NFL owner before you put
exactly,
a seat.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're,
you've paid off all the salaries.
If you're Bell and Rogers, I mean, you probably take a step back. You just got into this. And it's also co-owned.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily want to take a.
You don't want to run afoul of the boys' club.
Of the boys' club.
Yeah.
But you look and say, okay, maybe I make more money, but how much more? And that gets us back to the math issue. We talked about it 2 weeks ago. By my calculations, based on the NHL and NHLPA being apart, you know, they missed a paycheck again on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
November 30th is another paycheck. I think at that point, even if they accept your offer, you've lost money in the big scheme of things. And isn't it a number issue? So it goes like that to the owners as well. You know, at what point? So say the Leafs make $70 million a year.
Yeah.
They might.
They might make more.
We're talking profit, by the way.
Yeah. $35 million is lost by half a season. So the question is, over the course of the deal, say it's 5 or 6 years, do they make back $35 million or do they make more? And that's really what it comes down to. And I think people make it out to be a legal issue here. And we'll talk about the contract rights maybe next segment. But this is an accounting issue.
But guys, you're
numbers.
Richie, you're talking about lost revenue, lost salaries for the players. But what's also related to that is the lost revenue for the owners,
Absolutely.
Too. And that's what you're getting
Absolutely.
At, I think, right? And
exactly.
I mean, TV is a huge part of that. But, Drew, you think about it like this. Like Richie said, you know, the Torontos and the big markets, they're starting to soften. They're, basically, you know, the big difference here between the 2004 lockout and the 2012 lockout is the owner said, Gary, you can go ahead and get us the salary cap, and if you have to lock out the players for a full year, we're fine with that. Now what they're saying is, let's get a deal done. You know what? They've already agreed to this. If we need to make whole their salaries for the first 2 years, let's figure out how to do that. You know what? Let's come off some of these things like the five-year term limits. Let's get back on the ice.
I also think that the local TV factor, which was never as big of a revenue generator, you know, going back seven, mm-hmm. 8 years ago, mm-hmm. is now a bigger deal. These teams make so much money on some of the local TV contracts.
For sure.
That they just can't afford, or they don't want to give that up, you know, without having some sort of end game in sight. You know, at some point in time, they say, look.
And that's the problem, because when you compare it to the NFL, which people don't do as much, but when you compare it to the National Football League, there are no local TV rights.
That's
just local radio.
Yeah.
And some teams didn't have local radio.
For the teams, some teams make a ton of money off local television revenues, and other teams, and I mean, you know which teams they are, the teams that, you know, quote unquote shouldn't have hockey, make much less on their local TV deals. So I mean, every time that one game is missed or a series of paychecks are missed, especially as it relates to local TV contracts, that's again lost money for the owners. And at some point in time, they say, look, the players have more or less agreed to the 50-50.
That's right.
The deal is there to be done. Figure out the rest of the stuff. You don't have to necessarily get every last drop of blood out of the players.
Right, and Drew, we're 9 weeks, Richie, just quickly, we're 9 weeks into this lockout, and we've maybe lost 10 to 15% of revenue or 10 to 15% salaries. It might be as high as 20% by this point. But now this is the time when those paychecks and all of that revenue starts to matter. It's phase two of the lockout. So now you're getting into the second half where they're starting to think, okay, now we're going to lose that money in December, maybe even January.
That's right. Another paycheck.
I mean, can we talk about
contracting issues after this?
Two-week moratorium. Can we do the two-week moratorium, then contracting issues? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, we'll change it up. I'll change it up on the fly. We'll do contracting issues next, because that's supposedly becoming one of the...
But do we not, on this show, not say, you know, people were glossing over the contracting. I want to talk about next segment.
Okay, you'll talk about it in more detail next segment.
Oh, Richie's going to get his way here, Drew.
Richie's getting fired up.
He's getting his way.
I like it. We're live at the Max Bell Arena, the site of today's Goals for Dreams charity hockey game. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg with us. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve.
What about Instagram?
And the website is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Don't forget Instagram. We're on Instagram now. Come on, Drew.
Let's go to break. Welcome back to Max Bell Arena, site of the Goals for Dreams charity hockey game. A little bit later on this afternoon, broadcast here live on TSN 1290. We'll hear from some of those players coming up throughout the program this afternoon. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. I'd say go to Rumors tonight, but both shows are already sold out, so you'll have to save it for next week.
Kind of like today's game.
Yeah, today's game here is also sold out. Next week at Rumors, Keith Alberstadt is going to be performing.
Got to make sure you're getting Rumors tickets. You got to get them earlier in the week.
You got to get them really early. Yeah. Really early. Got to get on that. That's a, you know, when you're planning your Saturday night, if you want to go to Rumors, you got to plan it on Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. You know, tickets are going that quickly. Daryl Lennox coming up during the Christmas party season. Again, if you want to book your Christmas party, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Okay.
The place to do it. And then, of course, coming up 2013, Guy, you guys are both excited about Rob Schneider going to be appearing.
One of the best.
Rob Schneider.
How many times will Ezzy yell, "You can do it"?
Ezzy's just been heckling people here at the arena yelling, "You can do it." Give Rumors a call for tickets, for fundraisers, for Christmas parties, for New Year's Eve, whatever it may be. 488-4520, area code 204-488-4520, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club for the best in stand-up comedy.
So if you notice, Drew, we have Dakota playing for Gary here at Max Bell.
Right. Yeah.
And if you notice, the kids get older throughout the day because the youngest kids have the earliest ice time.
That's right.
So
that's
the benefit.
These kids are bigger than the kids that played in the game
Richie, that sounds like someone who wants to get back into coaching right there.
You know, I get the itch once in a while.
Really? Then I think you deal with the parents and the itch goes away. Is that usually what happens?
And we coached a couple of years ago and I get the itch, but then I also lose the itch when I remember that Richie hit me with a hockey stick on the bench when we were losing one game. So
I'm sure he was completely justified in doing so. Let's talk about the contracting issues. You were getting fired up before the break, so let's get into that. We've heard little bits and pieces about it, but not much was made about it because people sort of assumed the hockey-related revenue is the big thing. Once we get that settled, the contracting issues will come together much quicker.
So the comments regarding that were such that hockey-related revenue is going to be guaranteed, meaning no matter how the contractual issues sort out, the same money is going to be paid. I didn't see it, though, as being an easy issue. We had some guests on who said, oh, that'll get worked out in a day or two.
And there's an article, Elliot Friedman, CBC, who admits himself he thought it would be taken care of a lot easier than it was.
Again, giving up things that you got in a previous negotiation are difficult, but never mind that. The idea was the players get more freedom in a system because the system is restricted. Before, they had less freedom in a system than a system that was not restricted.
Right.
Meaning they had free market system, but you were UFA, unrestricted free agent, at 31 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They took it down to 27 or 7 years accrued, meaning 7 years played in the National Hockey League.
Which means the earliest you could be a UFA is 25.
25. So
that's
guys
coming in at 18.
Evander Kane, Zach Bogosian, those guys, 25.
Alex Burmistrov.
Same thing, exactly.
Yeah.
So... But this is the thing. The system as it is now is somewhat inflationary. The huge second contracts that they're doing it to themselves, but we'll qualify that.
The owners and the general managers are doing it to themselves.
But the second contracts, and what they're doing is they're raising, you know. If the second contract is getting close to $5-6 million, you're creeping up, and what you're doing is creating an arbitrary limit for to second-tier players. And they're getting closer and closer to first-tier players. So why would you give away that inflationary system that you've created?
You mean why would the players readily give that up when all it's doing is making them more money?
And do the owners really care? Sure, it's a little bit inflationary, but again, you control that. That is, you don't need to collude. You control that. So if I'm the players, I'm saying no.
Let me just clarify. You control that in the sense that if the owners were for lack of a better word, disciplined or smarter, they would prevent those second contracts from going up as high because the players don't have any leverage to prevent them from restricting the deal.
So on that point, you know, you have what they're looking for, and we've heard it before. You look at limiting arbitration. First of all, nobody goes to arbitration.
Very few.
Nobody went to arbitration
and
this
Richie,
year.
And when people do go to arbitration, usually it's a compromise somewhat in the middle. You know, one guy's looking for two. The team's looking for one. They'll settle for one and a half or
that's
something
right.
like
and
that.
And so the only, you know, you look at it, 28 years for a free agency, so moving in a year. 8 years accrued service, not seven.
Right.
I mean, are these breaking points for the NHL? Because I and the players, I stand strong on that front. I'm giving you 50-50. We're agreeing at 50-50.
Right.
Now, how to get there is an issue.
Right.
But that's fine. The actual issue, though, you know, in terms of the contracting rights, if I'm the players, I'm saying, first of all, they're not that significant. We've negotiated them and given
right.
them as a deal to you because we agreed to a hard cap that's tied to revenues, which hasn't necessarily been a detriment to them entirely. But
So that
idea is, you know, we had that first. And second of all, we're also talking about freedom in the system. And I think that's better for the league. And I realize, you know, if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan, you want to hold the guy's rights for 8 years.
You don't want to see what happens in the NBA where your own free, if you want to sign your
exactly.
own free agent, this is the contract you
exactly.
have to give them.
I hate that.
If you want
5 years. So basically, and
it's
I,
already prescribed the contract.
And
terms.
I wrote an article about this. You know, if you're the Jets and you can only offer the same amount of money as New York, basically you max out the contract. You know, you've topped out a contract of 5 years and you're looking at around the same amount of money, blah, blah, blah. Sure, your money goes further here, but where are people going to go? You have to give teams the ability to give you another year. Teams that flexibility. So I don't really agree on any term cap. I don't think,
right.
you know, maybe 10 years, fine. You can,
I'd
consider it. Five, definitely not. You put in the only thing I agree with, and I think shouldn't be a sticking point for either side, really, is the 5% back and forth. Now, players a little bit, but 5%, your contract cannot go from a point of less than or more than 5% of any 1 year.
Meaning there's no more of the Ilya Kovalchuk deals where a player gets $10 million in his first year and then it drops down
that's right.
to, you know,
that's right.
$2 million.
Right.
What it means is the amount you get paid in any single year cannot move plus or minus
right.
5% from
that
1 year to
the
next.
That one's fine, and I think it will be imposed. Aside from those, I don't think the NHL should be holding strong on these issues. I think that they should. They've got the 50-50. They can put it in an issue or two, and that's it. And I think that they're being. The idea is, you know, in a negotiation, and I realize you can. It's a labor negotiation, so you can start from scratch. You don't necessarily have to base it on the last one. But negotiation is, you know, by definition, a give and take a little bit, right?
Right.
So
it doesn't make. But you're absolutely right. It doesn't make any sense for the players to give up the 7% in revenue
and then
give up the contract.
Right. Doesn't make any sense.
And Richie, the thing, and I can understand, you know, Donald Fehr is new to the NHLPA and the NHL industry as a whole, and I can understand why the owners are a little bit skeptical and maybe not a little bit happy with
mm-hmm.
him. But I would agree completely. They're saying, and this is the problem. The whole issue is back in July when they put out their first offer. Before the lockout, and they said, okay, we're going to go down to 43%, five-year term limits, and all this nonsense. Everyone knew that that deal was never going to get accepted.
Right, that's right.
Okay, and then after that, then the owners signed these guys to long-term contracts,
right?
Okay, so then now the players are saying, okay, but you guys now, you violated your own rules and stuff like that, right? So now the players are saying, well, why did you sign us those? And I agree 100% with the players on that. And that's why this is a huge issue, and the lockout is not going to be resolved. The hockey-related revenue is a huge deal. But now it's surfaced that these other deals, the term contracts, the age of free agency, these are very important issues as well.
Yeah.
And the problem...
You're really creating issues here. I mean...
It doesn't make it... I mean,
no.
I mean, it's all nice and good for the NHL, for the owners to say, we're standing hard and fast, and you can't change the contracting terms that we've offered to you in our latest proposal. But... There's no reason for them to draw the line in the sand on those deals, except for maybe the plus or minus 5%. And the players themselves shouldn't really have a tremendously big problem with that.
No.
But, you know, if you're the players and you say, I'm giving up 50% of my revenue, or I'm giving up 7% of my revenue to bring it down to 50-50, why shouldn't I ask for a free agency
to stay the same?
Or become better for the player?
Exactly. You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, why should they seem content in staying the same?
Yeah. Which if I'm a player and I'm saying I'm giving up 7% of my revenue, I want free agency after 6 years of service or 25 years of age. You know, I don't want to wait 7 years and 27 or the owner's offered of 8 and 28. Well, what have I gotten out of this CBA negotiation? Truthfully,
I still don't understand the owners that are asking for a 2-year entry-level deal either. I don't understand that.
A 2-year entry-level deal doesn't make any sense for the owners whatsoever.
They say because the players won't have to prove themselves in that 2 years, so they'll get paid less money. First of all, the owners don't have any discipline enough to do that. Second of all, the players who are signing big contracts after are usually superstars anyhow.
It's funny that the owners still, or the NHL...
And if they're not, not all of them superstars, they're going to sign the big deals anyways, is my point. The guys who are maybe mid-level are going to still get good-sized contracts. They're going to be paid more than they would be under an entry-level deal for that third year.
Every contract is you know, from one contract to the next, it's almost always inflationary.
Right.
So if you're an owner and you're asking for pie-in-the-sky contracting issues, 2 years for entry-level doesn't make a lick of sense. You should ask for 5 years for entry-level.
That's right.
I mean, you're not going to get it, or you shouldn't get it, because, you know, the players are giving things up. Let me ask you guys this question, and it's not strictly due to contracting. If the lockout ends tomorrow,
yeah,
and it's, you know, 50-50, and let's say the contracting issues stay the same as they currently are, what can the players say that they've won in this negotiation?
Not a heck of a lot, Drew. I mean, what the players are saying right now is...
They didn't give them what they wanted, I guess.
So their win is that the owners didn't get...
Well, the original offer, which was obviously a joke, let's be honest, it was a joke, and you knew that everything was going to come up from there. They still haven't changed the 5-year term limits, the decreased age of unrestricted free agency, the 2-year entry-level contracts. The players clearly, and the thing is, the hockey-related revenue, they've met specifically probably the most on that. But
the craziest part about this whole thing to me is this. When they come to an agreement, it's going to be exactly what not just us or anybody on the street, what every single person thought the deal was going to be.
That's
which
right.
Makes it that much more embarrassing for Donald Fair, for Gary Bettman, for the players and the owners.
And
this is a waste of 9 weeks. It's a waste of time. You're costing other people money. I realize they don't care about other people, really. I mean, let's be honest here. They care first and foremost about making money for themselves.
They don't care about the employees rely on the concession stands being open.
In 2004, what Bob Goodenow did, which was a win for the players, even though the owners won with the salary cap, and I've said this for maybe 4 months now, is that they got the lowered unrestricted free agency age. And that meant that guys like Zach Parise and Ryan Suter at the age of 25 could sign those deals. That
was
a win for Goodenow. And you can bet that Donald Fear is not going to sign a deal where he doesn't get something for his own side.
Well,
that's a good point, Andy. I mean, you have to wonder about that.
You're wondering when that's going to happen. If I tend to agree with you, but you wonder what it's going to be and when it's going to happen.
And the unfortunate thing, Richie, is just sorry to cut you off, is that if it takes a year to get that, everybody loses. Because we've already lost.
Everybody's already lost.
Right.
It's just a matter of how much more losing is going to happen before they finally settle this, before the Ed Snyders and the James Dolan and the guys who need hockey for their other business lines need to step in and say, get the deal done. We got the 50-50. Everything else can stay the same. Be done with this nonsense.
This whole process is a real joke.
Well, what's another 2 weeks for it? Let's take a 2-week moratorium. We'll come back in a couple weeks and we'll talk about
2-minute moratorium?
Okay, how about a 2-minute moratorium instead? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at the Max Bell Arena at the University of Manitoba. Welcome back to the Max Bell Arena on the campus of the University of Manitoba. A proud alum that I am and that Richie, you are as well.
That's right.
Ezzy, we'll just leave you out of this conversation for a little bit. But it's okay. We still like you. You actually have two university degrees.
I'm a University of Winnipeg grad and Red River College.
There you go.
And
well-educated.
I dabbled at University of Manitoba for a couple courses as well.
A little bit of a dabble.
Yeah, I dabbled.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to hear. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is sponsored by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the fastest growing and one of the most sought after designations to have in the business world nowadays. Just really tremendous opportunities come from being a certified general accountant. To get more information about the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba, to find out how you can register for some of their programs, things of that nature, you can contact them at 204-477-1256, the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. We see more than numbers.
Drew, I know you have something else planned for this segment, but I mean, this is on topic here. I mean, I thought Eric Duhacek, obviously we've had on the show many times, I think he's a must-read as far as hockey writers go. I know Richie agrees with me. He had an interesting piece. He was talking about being at the Hockey Hall of Fame induction dinner, talking to some people, and then he actually quoted what a fan wrote in an article. This is as it relates to accounting, actually. And he said that possibly this time around, accountants and lawyers, no offense to Richie or Dave Manuk here, also a lawyer, that they might be a little bit too much involved this time around. And he said that, you know, they should be the ones that are figuring out the X's and O's and not really being the ones that are negotiating. Now, I don't necessarily know that that's the case. Oh. But this time around, it definitely seems like it's less about Bettman versus Goodenow than maybe accounting, money versus money. But the...
Andy, I think it's fair in Bettman's orders to the people below them to make to make it happen.
They're the ones steering these ships. I don't care if they're accountants or lawyers or what they are. But I mean, they certainly, both sides...
Or police officers.
It doesn't really matter at all. I mean... Every profession's got a role to play in this. I mean, there's a reason why negotiations happen between those who are trained in negotiating.
Right.
You know, that's what
right.
their training
that's
is
right.
in.
Yeah.
So I don't demonize one profession over another.
No.
I demonize everybody involved with this ridiculous negotiation.
I think the point, and you're right, Drew. You always are, which is unfortunate.
What? Yeah.
Well, a lot of the time, Richie, you're more right than Drew is.
60% of the time, he's always.
I disagree with.
As he's on Team Drew today, I like
yeah, exactly.
that. I like that, Izzy.
But you know, but the reality is that's. The players at the top, the Bettman, the Daly, and the Fear brothers. Obviously, those guys aren't going to let anything happen, and they're going to instruct their lawyers. But I think the point is maybe too much of the focus this time around has been over the figuring out the percentage of revenues and all that massaging of making whole, which I actually tend to agree with. I think, to be honest with you, I don't know about you. I don't think I can hear the words make whole again. I mean, it's been played to death.
You don't have to hear those words anymore. You now have to hear no words whatsoever because the NHL has proposed a two-week moratorium on negotiations. Now, I think a lot of this moratorium is a little bit blown out of proportion. If one side calls up the other and says, we want to talk, sometimes in the next two weeks,
exactly.
They'll talk.
But hold on, what if they...
But I think what the NHL is saying, it's not going to be us right now. You're going to have to make the next move. And also, the reason
the
why...
The time's out over the paychecks, Drew.
Of course. The reason why you impose this two-week moratorium is, what happens in your life every 2 weeks?
Get paid.
You get paid. So you take a two-week moratorium where no negotiations have happened. Mm-hmm. Well, you've lost the players have lost another paycheck, and the deal then takes another 2 weeks on top of that, or another 4 weeks on top of that. You lost another couple paychecks.
Well,
so
Drew,
that's all the NHL is planning on doing by this is tightening the screws a little bit. Hey, there's another 2 weeks. You guys aren't going to get paid. We're not talking to you anymore. Come to the table. It's now, quote-unquote, your turn to come to the table with some sort of offer.
It's game playing. It's posturing. It's all associated, again, with that old negotiating tactic. And does it benefit anyone? I mean, Fair and Bettman both in this place, I think, are responsible for all of this. Stupid. So the two-week moratorium comment is stupid. It's trying to put pressure on the players, and they're just going to play more games. And how they're not in a room right now negotiating, I mean, everybody agrees. These games and the ideas that they need to have some form of a break, and it's all mind games. And does it help getting a deal done or getting your way? And they don't come to the table wanting to get a deal done. They come to the table wanting to get their way. So, you know, you may need to have you may need to at least have mediation now. I think mediation is probably, I know the NFL mediator said he wanted a crack at it, and I think that's probably a good idea.
He said he'd work for free.
You know what? I think mediation is almost necessary here because Fear and Bettman's egos don't fit through the door at the same time, that's for sure.
Also, when there's personal animus...
It's already personal.
I know it's already personal, and that's another reason why a deal doesn't get done. because it's not
absolutely
it's not professional at this point in time. They're not sitting there professionally negotiating and discussing with one another. It's now a personal me, Gary Bettman, versus him, Donald Fear, conversation, and no side wants to give an inch because there's personal animus between the two, and you don't want to be seen as the weaker of the two individuals.
Well, you know what? Nothing like putting yourself before everybody else.
Well, but we already know that both sides here have done that, and I mean, you know,
the talk of the good of the game needs to be put aside, and what we need to talk about here is who can make more money for their constituents.
Well, Richie, I would say that, you know, getting a mediator in at this point wouldn't be a bad idea.
It helped a little bit last time, yes.
The reality is hockey fans in Winnipeg and across Canada and everywhere have had to put up with this lockout for 9 weeks, and that's bad enough. But in that 9 weeks, how many days of... Yeah, if you took all the actual formal negotiations, whether that's in person, on the phone, how many actual days have taken place where they've actually negotiated? Is that maybe a week?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe a week, maybe a week and a half? And now they're going to take 2 weeks off at the most crucial time. We've already talked about this earlier in the show. This is crunch time here. You're past the halfway point of the lockout. I mean, they've still got lots of time to save a half season. But the most you're going to get at this point is a half season. I think we'd all agree on that. Or something, you know, 50 games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fact that's what they want to do is Richie nailed it. I mean, and we've heard about this in the mass media, TSN, Globe and Mail, everywhere. I mean, this is posturing, and this is a stall tactic, another deadline hunting. I mean, we've talked about this. This is, again, the NHL. What did they do 2.5 weeks ago? Canceled the Winter Classic. Now let's put a 2-week moratorium. Let's put more pressure on the players who are going to lose another paycheck. So, I mean, again, it's just putting more pressure on the situation.
The owners aren't, the owners aren't in as big of a rush as the players should be because the owners don't get paychecks in on a bi-weekly basis.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you're owning a team, you're a millionaire or a billionaire anyway.
Exactly right. And you're in it
for the long... Many players are millionaires too.
And you're in it for the long haul. You're in it for the next, you know, decade, two decades longer than that. Yeah. It's the players who...
Remember, you can't pass on your career in NHL to your son.
Right.
You can pass on the business of owning a team to your son. And so... This could, you know, conceivably stay in the family for hundreds and hundreds of years.
But guys, I know, Drew, you wanted to talk about this a little bit later, but you know, I'll segue a little bit into the next segment or the next two segments.
Is that how you got here today, Izzy?
Yeah,
drove a segue.
With the Mark
Recchi, cold to drive a segue in winter.
You know, with the comments that came from Mark Recchi, I mean, I actually don't completely agree with that the players are the only ones that are. That, I mean, the players will. Will lose that money. The owners. I mean, the owners are still losing revenue here. I mean, there's and the whole, you know, industry as a whole of the NHL is losing here. I mean, it is a reality that you might lose sponsorship. And even though the fans will come back, a year lockout. I can't see anybody rationally arguing that a year lockout is somehow going to benefit the NHL down the road.
Are you telling me, Izzy, that a year lockout and then having to come back and watch more block shots in the Rangers games is going to be something that fans don't want to pay
it's funny, $150
a pop for?
No, but it's funny. The
can't
NHL,
believe it.
The NHL, the thing that sucks for that argument is that after the 2004 lockout, the NHL's revenues went up. So, I mean, that's what the NHL might be looking at it like that, too.
A lot of fit reasons for that having happened, though, and I don't think that right. boost is going to happen again, aside from the Canadian TV deal.
That's exactly right. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss if there is a 2012-2013 NHL hockey season, how do they split up the revenue for that season? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on location at the Max Bell Arena on the campus of the University of Manitoba. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at the Max Bell Arena, site of the Goals for Dreams charity hockey event that'll be taking place a little bit later on this afternoon. Team Ladd versus Team Stewart. Should be a dandy of a matchup featuring some great NHL players and some local Winnipeg police officers. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a home is one of your life's most stressful experiences. It's not an experience to be left in the hands of an amateur or to be undertaken by yourself. Use David Carr of Monopoly Realty and you'll be getting a true real estate professional who will handle your real estate transaction from start to end with the utmost professionalism and respect that your important transaction deserves. Give David Carr of Monopoly Realty a call at 230-6129. Once again, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. You can also find him online at David John Carr, C-A-R-R, DaveJohn.com. DaveJohn.com.
Yeah, give Dave Carr a call. He's a very good realtor.
No triple W?
Yeah.
Is that what you're going to say after that?
Yep.
Who was the guest that time?
Craig Kastetz
of ESPN, yeah. That was actually that was a funny exchange we had with Craig.
You know, Drew, of course, you mentioned that it's Team Andrew Ladd versus Team Mark Stewart. I believe we're going to try to get both of those guys on later.
Yeah.
They all have to talk before the game?
But what we have to ask them, of course, is if one of those guys lays a hit on one of the police officers, do they get handcuffed and then taken to the penalty box? Are the cops allowed to bring their tasers on the ice? I'm not sure about that. We'll have to ask them. But
I believe you're preemptively being arrested before the game starts. Isn't
that true? I'll be in handcuffs within the next hour. I won't be here for those interviews.
How many of these cops that you know on a first-name basis?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's going to be a really real fun event here, and I'm looking forward to it. I mean, we haven't seen these guys in game action since April.
And it's good for charity.
Exactly.
I mean,
We
have a strong charitable component of Illegal Curve, of course, as you can follow our Movember page.
Yeah, we should mention.
Oh, I thought that was Ezzy.
We should mention that Dave Manouk, who is to Richie's left, Drew forgot to mention, quite rudely, might I add. Just kidding. But Dave recently signed up Mark Stewart and Zach Bogosian and Hamilton Steen to our Movember page. Yes. Drew's the captain. We've raised almost $3,000. So if you have a chance, we'll get Reem to tweet out the link.
I got it.
What's the rank in Canada now?
ca.movember.com. Just search for Team Illegal Curve Hockey.
There you go.
And you'll be able to find the information. Yep. You can donate to any of us on the team, or you can donate to an individual member, whoever you want. And, of course, it's also available on illegalcurve.com. Well, through the morning papers link. Yeah.
We were talking today at breakfast, which Ezra scheduled for 10 o'clock and showed up at 10:34. Remus, you can get in here for a second. We're talking, I made a donation to all three of you. I made one to Drew, Ezra, and Dave.
Thank you, by the way, for that.
Oh, you're welcome. That's the first thank you.
Well, you're not growing a mustache.
Hey, I thanked you.
That's
thank
you. But we should mention, though, that Remus said he wouldn't give to all three of you. He wanted to pick which one. And based upon Remus, you can cut in if you want.
Has he made the selection yet?
No, I'm waiting till the end of the month. I want to give it to the most deserving or my favorite member of participation.
So who's that right now?
You know, I was leaning towards Ezzy, but I don't know, lately, taking a leg into Drew.
Team Drew. Reem, I'm not campaigning or anything, but I'll just say that...
Have there been gifts exchanged?
I'm not above bribery.
I'll just say that Dave Manouk last year was the unofficial winner of Movember up in the MTS Center press box. I'm just throwing that out there, so you might want to consider Dave, but it all goes to the same pot, so it's all good.
Well, we'll have to figure out how Remus is going to divide up his mustache-related revenue at the end of the month. Speaking of hockey-related revenue, there's been some discussion today, and it's seemingly becoming a bigger issue today, this week, this whole thing. How to divide up the 2012-2013, if there is an NHL season, what percentage of hockey-related revenue should each, the owners and the players, receive? To me, it seems like a pretty straightforward answer, 50-50, if that's what the CBA is going to call for in terms of the division of revenue. That's what it should be for 2012-2013. If you believe what Bill Daly and the NHL are saying, Donald Fehr is demanding something like 65 or 67% of the hockey-related revenue.
Completely absurd.
Go to the players.
Completely absurd.
Now, I agree with you that it's absurd. Make me a case. Pretend you're Donald Fehr, both of you. Make me a case for why the players should be entitled to 67% of hockey-related revenue for 2012-2013.
Their only argument, Drew, is that the owners caused the lockout because it's an owner's lockout and they should be responsible for it. Aside from that, it both begins and ends there. And it's the most ridiculous request. And if they're actually going to hold... maybe they're just being ridiculous because the NHL, in my opinion, is being ridiculous about contracting rights. But if it's not that and they're actually looking for 65 to 70%, then, they'll be... We'll have no hockey this year, and then we'll have a complete war next year over and all that. There'll be a new league and go to hell in a handbasket.
Well, Richie, obviously, we're trying to be objective here. And I mean, Drew, you asked the question. If we are Donald Fehr, if I'm NHLPA and my job is to, get the best deal for my players, I mean, he's saying that, the revenues right now as it stands is 57%. You agreed to that in the last CBA. And now as the revenues have grown to, record levels, we've heard about that, $3.3 billion, if you're Donald Fehr, you're saying, you know, the players have played a huge role in that, and that's where we're at now. And we don't think we should take a salary rollback. Now, if you're going up to 65%, essentially you're going to be raising the salary cap.
Yeah.
But that's the whole reason why we're in this situation. I mean, the owners are not only saying it can't continue to go on like this with the salary cap tied to revenues, but it's time to actually reduce that amount. And that's where we're at right now. But if you're Donald Fear, you're saying, well, my players are responsible for the revenues and they're the on-ice product. That's what I would say. I mean, that's where his head is at. He's not obviously going to get that. We all know that the end game is probably going to be around 50-50.
Well, of course, and it should be, but it's mind-boggling that they're even debating this is an issue that I think is so asinine in regards to how they could even logically come up to the conclusion that, yeah, we deserve 65% of hockey-related revenue for 2012-2013. We don't really know why. We can't articulate any sort of good reason for why that's the case, but we want it, so we think you should agree to it. Now,
sir,
once you agree to 50-50, and I'm not saying the Players Association has to agree to 50-50, but all indications are that they have. 50-50 is from the start of the CBA onwards. Yep. You know, there might be provisions for, the make-whole argument and for everything
else. The transition period,
that's fine. But at no point in time should it be a 67% split in that first year just because.
Right.
Just because it doesn't make. That's just not logical.
So, it's hilarious.
It's so frustrating and so aggravating.
Laughable, I don't mean it in a...
It's not in a funny sense of laughable. Is it? I mean, either you laugh or you cry, pretty much.
But then again, Richie, if you are to play the devil's advocate, and I've said this before, I don't lean more towards the players than the owners. Right? If I am on the players' side, and I am Donald Fear on that side, I mean, you're obviously saying that 57%, well, you guys started off at 43%. So the owners, I mean, and it'd be interesting to get your guys' opinion on this, but again, Gary Bettman coming out in July and saying we want to reduce it down to 43%. We want to limit contracts to 5 years, and then you see all these other contracts being signed for obviously more than 5 years and lots of money. That's laughable. And in that sense, Gary Bettman maybe have misjudged what he was doing by coming out and doing that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the starting off and that shot across the bow was a miscalculation on his part. In terms of negotiating this day and age, I think it's completely insane.
Look, but they claim that the initial shot across the bow, they claim galvanized the players. And the players are more unified than they ever would have been before.
That's they would have been unified anyways. I agree. But the offer was ridiculous, Drew.
The offer was ridiculous, but the fact that it supposedly, the concept that it supposedly galvanized the players more.
It's the old-fashioned way of doing things. I'm going to offer nothing. And then I'm going to come up with that offer a little bit and say, I'm being reasonable because I moved off my position. It's like, no. An unreasonable offer moved a little bit remains an unreasonable offer.
Let me ask you this, though. If the play owners had made an initial, quote-unquote, reasonable offer.
Oh, different life for sure.
Do you think that the players would have accepted, would have seen that as being a reasonable offer and accepted it?
Maybe, but they might have, Drew. They may have. I mean, I still think they would have been galvanized regardless. I think that's what Fear has been doing.
Well, if you start your offers at 50-50... What are the odds that the players are going to say, yeah, that's fair, let's go, let's sign?
Sure, and I understand that point. But 43 is a lot different than 48, 47.
Fine. But to the owner's credit and in the public perception, I think the public does perceive the owners of having given something by increasing their offer each and every time.
And then they're stupid because we all know that every other league, generally speaking now, revenues tied to salaries is 50-50.
Yeah. Right.
Or close to it.
That's become the industry standard.
And that's why we knew that there was... That's why we said way back
who's
when...
Who's paying who's paying these salaries in this day?
Well, the players.
It's not the TV deal in the NFL. In the NFL, it's the TV deal. The baseball and basketball TV deals are way bigger.
In the NHL,
the fans
are
taking the brunt of it.
Gate receipts.
And if they come back and pay all their money again, who are they paying? They're paying for both of these sides to act like prima donnas.
And I think that's why... And
you want to control, it? Don't buy the tickets. Don't buy that stuff. Control it for a little bit.
But we both know very well.
Exactly.
That that's not going to happen.
What did the fans win in this? Remember last time the hilarious comment by Bettman that ticket prices were going to... Yeah, that was a joke.
Of course. And to his credit, sort of, he hasn't even pretended as if the fans are going to
be... To his credit, he lied.
Of course, he lied the first time, and he's not trying to lie again because people would laugh him out of the arena.
And we could say that why don't the owners lower the ticket prices, but again, in 2004, they said they were going to do that, and as we know, they've gone up every year. Well, but if you looked at the last 8 years, they've gone up 20%.
How much more can ticket prices go up?
you wouldn't think very much more because you've almost frozen, at least in the bigger markets, in the Canadian, in the, you know, in the Winnipegs and Calgarys and Edmontons, you've almost frozen out the quote-unquote, well, you have frozen out the average fan.
For sure.
Maybe he can get to one game.
You know, you talk about the 3% increase, I think, they have built into the season tickets, right?
3%? Yeah, 3% is what the Jets are.
Is every working man's income going up 3% a year? I don't know.
Not usually. I mean, there's no guarantee that there is.
I don't know.
There's more or less a guarantee that your season ticket price are going to.
Your ticket prices go up 15%. Does your salary in line with it? Do you have the disposable income? And these are issues that have to be asked.
Of course. Yep. And these are issues that had to have been asked when Jets first came back.
Sure.
And no, people.
But it's not just the Jets. It's everyone.
Of course. It's not just the Jets. Of course.
3% at least limits it from those teams that hike it up 15% or 10%.
Yeah.
After a successful season.
You're right. Like the Kings or, you know, when you have a good year and all of a sudden you get your season ticket renewal notice and. Holy moly! Look how much more tickets my tickets are going to cost me.
Well, make sure when you know that this is a fight over money, and then the fans will be paying for it.
Well, and an event like this, it's all about obviously raising money for charity and giving the fans an opportunity see the Jets during a lockout, right? I think we'd all agree with that. And when you think about it,
there's a reason why the players are doing this in each and every city throughout, or should be doing it.
Yep.
And the New York Rangers did something for Hurricane Sandy.
Gabrick and friends.
Yeah, or Richards and friends or something like that. Yeah, they were all involved in there. Because, you know, it does give the fans a good feeling.
Yep.
You know, nobody's going to pay money to see the owners play in a charity hockey game.
Right, but Drew, everything, the NHL's plan, when the NHLPA are calculating the revenues and splitting that up, it comes from my pocket. That guy's pocket that's watching this game right now. That's whose pocket it's coming from. But you never hear, we continue to appreciate the fan support, and we know that they're going to come back.
I'd rather they not talk about the fans. And to their credit, they haven't even mentioned the fans.
Yeah, the fans.
Because don't pretend that this has anything to do with the fans. It's strictly a business deal between one side and the other.
Rich people fighting over money.
It's rich people fighting over
money.
Money that is contributed to by people of... usually average salary, average income, average revenue, who use for their escape, they use professional sports.
And then they play off the media, and the media, you see some partial media right now, come on, get your head out of sand here. We know the games that are being played. Don't take everything at face value.
Right, and you
always, as you don't get any face value in the NHL and all the pro sports, but especially during the some of the propaganda that's thrown out there right now.
Right, and garbage. Depending on what side you lean on, it shouldn't really matter at this point, to be honest with you. The reality is, we've lost hockey. We want it back, and it's unfortunate. You know, the players. We're gonna have some players on later. You know, they're gonna. They'll all say we don't appreciate this or whatever, but the guys at the top, the NHLPA and the NHL, have decided that they're not really interested in getting the best deal for both sides. They're interested in getting the best deal for one side.
Of course, there's no angels in this negotiation. There's only devils. And I'm not talking about the New Jersey version. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at the Max Bell Arena, site of today's Goals for Dreams charity hockey event. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at the Max Bell Arena. The NHLPA Goals for Dreams charity hockey event will get underway starting at 3:30 this afternoon. Live coverage of the event here on TSN. Then 1290. In the meantime, this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined up in the press box here by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg.
How's it going, Drew?
Doing very well. Producer Tim is the on-site operator today. Michael Remus is back at TSN 1290 Studios, and Dave Manuk is here in the background just overseeing operations. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. Our website is www.illegalcurve.com. And apparently we now have an Instagram, which I guess you can follow us at Illegal Curve on Instagram.
Oh, it is just pictures of Drew with a mustache.
Well, that's the thing. Now that, you know, Dave, Drew, and I are participating in Movember, when we're all rocking stashes, we've gotten a little bit indie.
It's only followed by the local police.
Yeah, we're on Instagram now. We're taking it up a notch here.
Or maybe
taking it down a notch.
I'll tell you what. Laura, my wife, does not like the mustache whatsoever. She's happy that I'm raising money, but she looks at me every morning in the morning, shakes her head, and walks away.
You would have 100% had a mustache in the 80s, though. 100%.
Yep.
Didn't your dad have a mustache?
My dad, well, in the 70s, he had a mustache. Yeah. He sort of shaved it in the early 80s.
Well, it's funny. We've got... you know, Mark Stewart on...
Did your dad have a mustache?
He did for many years.
So all three of our dads have
We've got Mark Stewart on Team Illegal Curve.
And David's dad has a mustache.
Dave,
Timmy?
Drew's, dad, Drew's actually five. Second right now. Remus, raising money. Remus. So people are obviously liking your stash. So I don't want to hate Drew.
Did Remus's dad have a mustache?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, okay. There you go. But it was funny the other day. I was wearing an outfit, like, you know, pants and a shirt or whatever.
Thank God.
You were wearing pants and a shirt.
I was wearing pants and a shirt, and Laura comes up and she sees me and she says, "You look exactly like my father right now," because Laura's dad still has a mustache. She's
That's
like,
true.
"Whatever you do, immediately go change, please. It's a little too disturbing right now." So anyways, fortunately...
So you shaved. You're back.
Fortunately, Movember is done in another about 10, 12 days, so I can get rid of this. And
you're not going
to
keep
back
it?
Back to my normal boyish
keep
good
it,
looks.
Drew.
No, I think I'm good. I think I'm good on that front. Nobody wants to see me with that. Yeah. Let me ask you guys this question. You know, one thing that's sort of bothering me, and I mean, I follow a guy like Alan Walsh on Twitter, and Alan Walsh has been engaging in these Twitter wars with Darren Dreger of TSN and Damian Cox, you know, the Toronto
Star. He needs to
star.
Relax a little bit.
I agree with you that Alan Walsh needs to relax a little bit. Let me ask you about the role of the player agent in this lockout. Because, honestly, I'm of this opinion. I don't know enough because I haven't spoken to a player agent to really find out. To me, the player agents are... They're playing both sides, and I don't think they're treating their current players properly in terms of giving them advice as to what is in their best interest.
I think, Drew, that their role in this negotiation is less than the role they had in the last one, only because the union is far more fractured the last time around than it is now. So I think what happens is you have Donald Fehr, who's, like we said, galvanized, that's the key word here, galvanized the players. And I think when that happens, I think the role of agents...
breakaway here
is less of an issue, because I think what happens is, Drew, is agents like players like owners, they all have, there's a divergent views there. I mean, they want to maximize their client's interest, but some agents might feel like whoever the player wants to go is the best bet. Some agents may say, you know, you got to take the most money, or advise their client to take the most money. So I think agents last time around, when the Goodenow and Saskin and there was Fractured and Linden and all that stuff, they played a big role, especially behind the scenes. I think this time Donald Fehr's driving the bus, and the agents are just along for
the ride.
Let
me ask you, is an agent's responsibility to just negotiate contracts for players and that's it, or should they be providing advice throughout the course of their relationship with the player?
But I'm saying it's all about the leader.
Right.
And they're following the leader. And here they have trust in the leader.
Yeah, but if they're following the leader off of a cliff...
No, not necessarily off a cliff. I think that last time they felt like... They feel like Donald Fehr has been through this 100 times, you know, figuratively speaking. And he's been through it 100 times, and he can be trusted, as opposed to last time. I don't think they thought he could be trusted. That doesn't mean they won't advocate and inform their clients about what they think is best, and maybe to speak to Fehr about it. But I think last time they were basically trying to go behind his back. They didn't think Goodenow... And they saw the writing was on the wall.
Sure.
And they tried to get in there. I think this time it's far less. And again, there's no cap here. As much as they're fighting over money, it's less of a...
Already been established. That's not going anywhere.
Let's be clear that the cap isn't going away.
No, but, you know...
The cap goes away when guaranteed contracts go away.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, no, I mean, NFL still has no guaranteed contracts in
the
cap.
But true enough. But conversation.
Right. Guys, there's exactly, fear here on... Not Donald Fehr. Fear, F-E-A-R, on both sides. I mean, you know, the NHL owners, obviously, they don't want a full-year lockout. That's not exactly what they want. But they actually are a little bit afraid of Donald Fehr because he's new to this game. They don't know exactly what he's about. And, I mean, Elliot Friedman, we've had on the show before. We all read him.
Yeah.
He talked about this. He's not negotiating on what they're putting on the table. He's kind of negotiating. He's almost having a separate negotiation. And he's frustrating a lot of the owners because they don't know, obviously, what he's about. They've heard what he's done in Major League Baseball. But on the player side, they're fearful because there's a possibility they're going to lose money. That's what they're afraid about.
Every time they don't get paid, they lose money.
Right.
And I don't know that they fully comprehend that every paycheck that goes away is lost money for all of their career.
Right.
You're never going to gain that money back.
And that's why there's frustration. And that's why even though you would probably like these guys to not be talking about it, they're asked questions. And that's why they're frustrated. That's why you saw Sidney Crosby talk about it and say, you know, express his... You know, his anger with this whole situation.
Let me ask you guys this question. And you mentioned Sidney Crosby, because he's probably the marquee name in the NHL.
The best
nowadays.
Player in the NHL.
If the NHL had embraced Wayne Gretzky and made right by him, during the Phoenix Coyotes fiasco and given Gretzky whatever money he needed, and he had a more visible, more active role now.
That's a good point.
Would Wayne Gretzky be able to play a role in getting this negotiation concluded sooner?
Last time in February, him and Mario Lemieux had a role in trying to get it together. They weren't able to, but they certainly had some traction there, and I think that's a great point, Drew. You know, somebody who has respect of both sides.
Right.
And there aren't many of them.
Yeah.
Lemieux and Gretzky and those kind of guys. So the players can relate to them, but so can the owners. I think that's a great point.
And they've talked about this before.
Great goal.
Great goal by the Fort Gary player. Here.
Are they up 3-2 now, or is it tied?
3-2 now, 3-2. I believe.
3-2. Yeah. Great hockey here. You know, it's funny. Mario Lemieux is obviously going to have still an owner, obviously. It's expected his voice is going to be a little bit louder as we get closer to January. It's interesting. Gretzky, I'm not so sure if he's going to have much of a voice, but he should because...
But he won't because he's got no vested interest in being involved. The NHL shunned him.
Completely isolated him.
The NHL froze him out for whatever reason, and I think it was a poor error because you always want Wayne Gretzky involved in your game. He is still the face of hockey in the United States of America, I would venture to say with a fair bit of confidence.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
You hear from Gretzky every 6 weeks. You know, somebody calls him and he agrees to do an interview with one of his boys. He just says the same thing.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a deal to be reached within the next 4 to 6 weeks. Because he's got no vested interest whatsoever to be involved.
He's definitely not as fired up as he was in 2002, when he was the general manager of Team Canada, for sure.
If the NHL had, what was the amount of money he was owed from the Coyotes fiasco?
Maybe 10, they think.
$10 million. Not a huge sum of money.
Drew, you owe me $10, by the way.
Yeah, well, it's okay. You're not going to get that. Call Gretzky. See if he'll give it to you. But if they had kept Gretzky on side, they give him the $10 million and they say, Wayne, we need you here. We need you to be an ambassador. To hockey, like you do in various other sports where they still bring trot out and the wise old owl, for lack again of colloquialism.
You on this show.
Me on this show, exactly, the wise old owl. Gretzky would have the respect of both sides. They would at least listen to
him. Look at Bobby Orr, though. He's a player agent. He came out early in on this, and I realize that we've heard so much conjecture, so much talking, and a lot of it is rhetoric, but a guy like Bobby Orr, who is, like I mentioned, a player agent, and he is involved with junior hockey, arguably the greatest defenseman of all time, he was saying, Lock, he's the best.
Yeah.
Lock Bettman and Daly up
arguably
with the
arguably the best player of all time.
Yeah. Exactly. He said, and this was, I believe, in September, very early on, he said, Lock, Bettman, Daly, and the Fear Brothers up there, get a deal, let's go. And I mean, he's more so, you could say, on the player's side. But he wasn't saying, the player is this, the player is that. He's saying, let's get a deal done. And unfortunately, I don't think there are enough people that are saying that because of the vested interest, Drew, like you said, that someone like a Mario Lemieux has in all this.
I'm curious, and I don't know the answer to this question. How do the players, I guess their players' agents, game's tied up. Dakota with
Richie,
the big goal
is
to tie
Drew
the game.
Doing play-by-play here, or is Drew playing the role of Brian Munns here?
I don't think Munns has got anything to worry about, I got to tell you. I wonder what the player agents, I wonder if they still get a percentage of the money that's owed to them, even if their players aren't getting paid.
I think it's on a total value of the contract paid out. So they get 3%, 4%, 5%, whatever the heck it is.
And then it's a matter of
total contract. So
when
the contract's not paid out, they won't get that percentage.
Okay. Well, that's
so, they, I mean, they want money too.
Yeah, of course they want money. So you would think that they would almost be...
But the contracts like Kolachek's are annuities.
That's a separate issue, I suppose. Yeah, how do you get money out of an annuity? But, or on a regular basis, at least. The interesting thing is, though, what should the player... If you're a player... And you go to your agent and you say, I really don't know what I should be advocating. I really don't know what I should be doing. When do you decide, what does that player agent say? And that's the question I don't know the answer to necessarily. And it would be interesting to, I don't think the individual agents know. I think it probably changes on a case-by-case basis.
Well, Drew, the police are in the building, so either they're here to start getting their equipment on or they're here to take me away. So.
Either way, it looks like you're out of here, Ezzy. Anyways, well, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to sort of shift our focus away from the lockout, start talking about more of the charity game, the Goals for Dreams charity hockey event live at the Maxwell Arena. Team Ladd versus Team Stewart, you'll hear it live on TSN 1290.